Welcome to the Pro Photographer Journey Podcast, your resource for building the photography business of your dreams. This is Shamira Young, bringing you tips, business strategies, and interviews with award-winning photographers. We're all in this together. Let's get to the good stuff. Hey everybody, I am so excited because today we get to chat with another photo shelter photographer who is rocking their business. I'm here with food and lifestyle photographer Darina Kupchuk. Darina, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
And I've told you this before, maybe to the point where you're sick of it, but when I saw your work, I was blown away. It is beautiful.
Oh, thank you so much. Thank you.
And we're going to dive into this a bit during the interview, but what I love about your work is that you have your own style, and the lifestyle component that you blend with your food photography, just looking at your website right now, it's just, the work speaks for itself. And your website, by the way, is absolutely beautiful and professional and modern, and just, it shows off your work so well.
Thank you so much. I appreciate that.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, Darina, you know, I've looked at your work quite a bit and I love it. And I know a bit about your background, but for the benefit of our listeners, could you give us an overview of yourself and how you ended up being a food photographer?
Sure. So I'm currently self-employed, freelance food and lifestyle photographer. So my focus is on shooting food and the surrounding culture and lifestyle around food. So in this case, this is what I mean by lifestyle. I do shoot some product photography, still life photography, and a little bit of portrait work, but again, it tends to be related to food. So the product is usually food packaging or images for food packaging, and the portrait work tends to be chefs or cookbook authors and so forth. So I went to photography school here in Vancouver, BC, where I lived. I took a program over several years while I worked in my former career, which was in career counseling and coaching. And in the past, I've worked extensively as a teacher and a professional facilitator. My greater education, however, is in writing. I have a Master's of Fine Arts in Creative Writing from the University of British Columbia here in Vancouver. When I took the program, I specialized in fiction writing, but put it on the shelf to pursue photography. And right now, I'm using my writing skills to write about photography. So I'm currently a contributing writer to Digital Photography School and Expert Photography. And also I write for the website of the Food Bloggers of Canada. So that's kind of my background. As far as how I actually came to photography was through my writing. So when I was laid off back in 2008, like a lot of other people, I started doing some food writing, started food blog, writing for some magazines and online publications, and decided to start a blog basically to have a writing portfolio to show editors. And I realized that I would need some pictures to put on my blog, and picked up a camera basically for the first time and realized that I actually liked taking the pictures more than even doing the food writing. So a couple years later, went to photography school and then, took it from there, basically.
And you know, what's interesting about food photography is if you log on to really any social media site, Facebook, Instagram, people love taking photos of their food.
Yeah.
It's a skill that can be underappreciated until you see someone who does it right. And you do it right. And you do it very well. Whereas on Facebook, it's, there are some pretty bad food photos. And of course, they're not food photographers, you know. Trying to take a picture of their dinner. They're just taking a picture of it for fun. But there's a night and day difference between a professional like yourself versus someone who's, you know, proud of the meatloaf they cooked that night and want to post it on Facebook.
Definitely. But we all start there, right? And when I look back at some of my old photographs, they look the same. And it's been a really long, hard road to get my photography to where it is now. I feel it's a very difficult niche to master. Food actually doesn't really look that good in front of the camera, so it's really difficult to work with. There's a lot of components that go into, you know, getting that shot. Sometimes a whole team of people, right?
Right, right. And we're going to dive into that. I'm thinking of why am I blanking out on the biggest football game of the year? Super Bowl. Wow. I'm going to get hate mail for that one. It was Super Bowl probably 5 years ago. And I cooked this huge, like, rack of ribs or whatever. And it was delicious. And I remember spending, like, 45 minutes to an hour that night trying to take a decent photo of it to put on social media. It was the hardest thing ever. Ever. And, of course, I was underestimating how difficult, you know, it would be. Like, oh, it's just a plate of food. I can do this. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
So you hit the nail on the head when you said that you do have to work to get your photography, your food photography, up to the professional level. So how did you do that?
Well, for me, actually having a blog was instrumental in that, because I had to post and I had to practice. And if I wanted to grow my audience, I had to make sure I was consistent, and therefore it forced me to work on it. And I found by the time I actually took a food photography class in photography school that I had kind of worked my way through a lot of it and taught myself a lot of the components that I needed to know just through trial and error and, you know, whatever research I could do. At that time, there was very little even online about food photography, especially, you know, professional level food photography.
And you mentioned a little earlier that it takes a team. I think that's something a lot of people don't realize. I didn't realize it until probably years after I started doing photography, just what goes into it with a food stylist. And sometimes even the food isn't quite what it appears.
That's right.
Yeah. Could you tell us kind of the work that goes into a typical food photo shoot?
Yeah. So, I mean, the number of people you will have working on a shoot really depends on, you know, who the client is, who's hiring you. So sometimes I work with a creative director, food stylist, sometimes a prop stylist is even required. Or sometimes you just work with a food stylist, or on really small budget stuff, even do the food styling yourself. So the food itself is natural. I think there's a lot of misconception that, you know, we're basting turkeys with motor oil and things like that, but actually natural ingredients are used, but the food is not necessarily edible afterwards, because, for example, that turkey or poultry, if you cooked it fully, as soon as you took it out of the oven, the skin would wrinkle. So what is done is actually that it's only cooked for about 20 minutes, and you probably do not want to eat any poultry that is just cooked 20 minutes. Probably get food poisoning. So a lot of it is just undercooked, doctored in some way to look its best. By the end of the day, it's been, you know, sitting out there, replaced a few times, hands have gone through it, so it's not really edible in the end. But this photographer and the food stylist are working together as a team. They're basically collaborating on the best way to show the food and compose it and so forth.
There's a definite art to it. A definite art to it. And also another thing that stands out to me with you, and also I've noticed this with other successful food photographers that I've talked to, is that while you're focusing on your niche, however you want to say it, you still have a well-rounded toolkit of skills. And looking at you, you mentioned that while you photograph food, it also involves portraits and product photography, and you incorporate writing as well into your skill set, which kind of makes you a, I guess, what, triple, quadruple threat, really. Did you realize that all of these would kind of come into play when you started your business?
I actually did write a business plan when I started my business. A lot of people don't think that's that useful of an exercise for a creative business, but I found it very helpful to identify my target market. And I also realized at the time, if I wanted to succeed as a full-time photographer, that I would have to be able to do more than one thing. And that is where my, you know, teaching, coaching background and my writing skills were a fit. And I thought about how can I use these to my benefit, because my intention at that time was to just start a full-time photography business. I didn't have the luxury to go from, you know, part-time to full-time. I just wasn't in that employment situation at the time. So I had to make it work. And I thought of what are the other skills that I can use to facilitate this.
You know, that's huge, writing a business plan. That's something I didn't do when I started my business years ago. And as a result, I thought I was marketing to everybody and undercharging and learning the hard way, because apparently that is how I learned with my photography business. So for you, can we kind of, and I, this can be its own separate show. So just briefly, how did you identify your target market? I think that is one of the most important things that a photographer can do.
Well, I very much like what you just mentioned, before I started writing my business plan, I thought my market was everybody. I thought, wow, food is such a great niche. I can market to restaurants. I can market to food product packagers. I can market to artisan food producers. I could go after marketing agencies, ad agencies. And then I quickly realized that actually that was not going to be a good idea, and that I really needed to focus in order to get clients. And at that time, I decided that marketing agencies would be the best fit for me, because they would be already tapped into certain clients that I felt that I wouldn't be able to access myself, and that they would be representing basically different brands. And that's where I concentrated my attention on, and I tried to meet these people and establish a relationship with them.
I would imagine even that would be an art.
Definitely, but it's a necessity. It's something that you absolutely have to do, is identify who your ideal client is, and then basically build a relationship with them. It's all about relationship building.
Mm-hmm. I think a lot of people get discouraged when they don't get a reply back to their email or their phone call right away.
Yeah, definitely. Well, as I mentioned earlier when we started our talk, was that my past career was in career counseling. And day after day, I would meet people that were looking for a job. And these people had been searching for employment for 6 months, 8 months, 10 months, sometimes a year. And they had decades of experience and a lot of skills, and they didn't understand why they weren't getting work. And I would question them about their job search. And it always turned out that the way they were looking for work was sending out resumes. They would sit at their computer, look for job postings, and send their resume to people. And if you do that and do nothing but that, you only have a 4% chance of being hired. And a lot of people don't realize that, because they think because of the internet, the way to look for work has changed, but it hasn't changed. It's all about connecting with people, creating relationships and maintaining them. And I would say with photography, it's very much the same. If you just send out emailers and you know, postcards and that kind of thing, and don't put yourself out there, it's going to be really, really hard to get any work.
Yes. There's nothing more powerful than interacting with someone face to face. You know, I've, even for me, that was what made it, could make or break a business. And it made my business, especially when moving to a new city a couple years ago.
Yeah.
And I think with any type of photographer, you can look at any area of your state or your location. And we're kind of lurking all over the place, right? There's like a photographer around every corner. And so, you know, that was a fear of mine, moving to my new city, Port Huron. But what I found was that initially I did have to force myself to get out into the public, because I'm a bit of a an introvert. And but what I found was that I was usually the only photographer showing up to networking meetings, even though there were plenty of photographers in the area. And so, and this is true whether you're a wedding photographer, portrait, food, when you are interacting with your target market, your target clients face to face, work doesn't necessarily come right away, but you want them to think of you first as soon as they need professional photography.
Putting a face to a name, and it just makes it easy on them, right?
Right.
They don't want to have to send out, you know, 10 different emails.
Yes. And so, Dorina, what are some of the biggest challenges or struggles that you've had to overcome when building your business? And how did you overcome that?
I would say probably the biggest struggle was learning to price my work and stand behind its value. And I think this is something that even a lot of veteran photographers still struggle with, because there's no one standard price for photography. It's dictated by a lot of things, such as the market where you live, who your clients are, how the images are going to be used, and so forth. And when you start out, you have to often work with smaller businesses that may have never worked with a photographer, don't have much of a budget, and don't necessarily understand what goes into a photo shoot or why it costs so much. And then educating them becomes really important. So it's kind of almost like a double-edged sword, right? You need to price yourself so you're not totally undercutting everybody else and making photography basically a commodity. But you also have to be realistic about the work that you can get and the clients that you can work with at that point, right? So it's really kind of a balancing act at that point. And then, yeah, as I said, educating the client, because in these days with digital photography and everybody having an iPhone and, you know, they kind of think it's if they get an expensive and fancy camera that they can do the job too. But we all know that it doesn't really work that way. And that there's a lot of, you know, technical skills, composition and so forth involved. And lighting is, you know, probably also one of the biggest factors as well, right?
Yes. And you know, that brings to mind, oh, who said this? I can't remember. But speaking to your point about how people can spend money on a fancy camera and think they can, you know, think that they're a professional photographer, mm-hmm. it's kind of like giving someone a stack of wood and, I don't know, I'm not a person who builds stuff, but, you know, a bandsaw mm-hmm. and a drill, I don't know, and expecting them to know how to build a mm-hmm. house. With no yeah. training, right? Like, you can't just get the tool and call yourself a photographer yeah. or a woodworker or whatever. You have to put in the work, definitely put in the work for it.
Yeah. And I've just found that I really had to spend a lot of time on that, right? With mm-hmm. new clients, even marketing agencies that may have worked with a lot of photographers on different types of shoots, but not necessarily have worked on food shoots, also don't always realize how much work there is even in, you know, pre-production and how much planning actually has to go into it in order to pull it off, right? So it's really about communication and explaining why you need things done a certain way and why you need to have the answer to certain questions.
Absolutely. So this is kind of on the fly, mm-hmm. but are you able to generally walk us through the steps of how you educate a client? I guess the pre-production steps that you go through to get them to understand what goes into a photo shoot, because I think that would be really educational for our listeners.
Sure. So when someone approaches me, I definitely try to get them on the telephone or even an in-person meeting. I'm willing to do that if they're up to it. So we can, you know, establish connection, establish a relationship. But if they don't want to do that or can't do that, then definitely speak with them on the phone. And I have a list of questions that I go through with them before I can do my quote. I don't have, you know, hourly rate or even necessarily, you know, day rate. I have a numbers that I kind of work with, but I have to look at other costs, for example, like studio rental, food stylist, you know, whether I'm going to include post-processing in that number and so forth. So I have to answer several questions to be able to put together an estimate that is accurate. So again, one of those questions would be about the studio, who is providing the product, who is buying the product, are they providing it, or is that an expectation on my end, which it usually is. Do I need to hire a food stylist for this? Where is it going to be shot? So sometimes it is a studio, but quite often I work on location. So I have to figure that out as well. How are the images going to be used? Is it mostly for website? Is it for food packaging? That gives me an idea about the usage. And you know, when do they need to shoot by? When do they need the files by? Who is going to be doing the post-processing? Is it me, or do they have somebody in-house that they want to do it, or somebody else? And it usually is me, but it really depends. Like if it's a marketing agency or sometimes even a magazine, they have a certain look and then they want all of the photographs edited the same way to make sure that aesthetic is consistent. So these are the kinds of questions that I ask. And then once we have that conversation, then I send them the estimate and they get back to me about whether or not they want to go forward. And at that point, I start planning the different things like the food styling and where are we going to do the shoot and the date and all of that, right? But as far as the food styling goes, one thing that I do want to mention is that if they do require a food stylist, and again, this is a requirement most of the time, unless the client is quite small or it's a restaurant and they have a chef who's going to be doing plating, you have to get a quote from the food stylist first. So you have to know what is involved in order to go to the food stylist and tell them what is needed. They can estimate how much time it's going to take them because they're also going to need probably a day or a day and a half just for prep, which they charge for. And then you take that number and you put it in the quote that you give to the client. And when I am doing the food styling on smaller budget shoots, I also charge for food styling because it's a separate skill set. It's something that takes a lot of time. And basically my quotes are based on the time that I'm going to spend on the project from start to finish. So I do incorporate that, but it's not necessarily as much as a food stylist would charge because I know that I'm working on a lower budget.
Wow. I had a general idea of what goes into giving someone an estimate of what it would cost, but that was really, really enlightening. Oh my goodness. So, because I would imagine people, being a marketing agency or a client, maybe even smaller clients, they might just start off assuming that you can give them a quote right away. Or, how, you know, like people want to know how much is this going to cost?
Yeah, that's usually the first question. I often get emails, you know, what is your rate? How much is this going to cost? They want an hourly rate. And I always have to get back to them and just say, there are many factors. I can't give you a number. I have to ask you some questions because I basically have a creative fee that is based on my time and all the different components that are going to need to be put together in order for this to be executed.
I love that you stand your ground. Yeah, because I've, even from some of my own clients, they can kind of apply pressure in the beginning.
Yeah, I just can't do it. I mean, and what I found, like especially maybe the first good year of my business, is that I really had no idea how long some of these things would take. And it always took about 25-30% longer than I thought. And therefore, I ended up undercharging by 25-30%. So I learned to quickly, you know, estimate my time to be about 25-30% longer than I initially thought.
Oh, okay. So we kind of touched on this a bit, but if there's anything you felt that you left out, as far as what have you found to be the most effective techniques in getting new clients and assignments, either when you were starting out or even today?
So I did touch on it, which is actually approaching the people that you want to work with. So my recommendation is that if you're starting out in this industry, put together a print portfolio, not just an online portfolio, but a book like through, you know, Artifact Uprising or something like that. You know, something like that would do, high quality print book or something, and make a list of your 20 ideal clients and start phoning those people. So it could be a little bit difficult sometimes to get through to the right person, but you can call up, you know, say it's a marketing agency, call up, ask who the creative director is, or ask the receptionist who is responsible for hiring photographers. Try to talk to that person. And in that approach, you don't really necessarily want to make it a salesy kind of approach. You can just start talking to them about, you know, what their needs are, what they're looking for, what is their hiring process, and you're just asking questions to figure out how you can bring value to them, right? Rather than it just being a self-serving kind of thing where, like, you know, how can I get to work for you, right? Because they're going to be a lot more open to hearing from you, because they need photographers as well. But I think the approach is kind of what gets you in the door or not, right? So identify your target market, start to go after them. You know, go show them your work, show them what it looks like in print. People still love to have something tangible, right? That they can, you know, touch and feel and look at. I found that to be really valuable. And then the other thing that I would say that has really helped me is actually...
And do you mind if I interrupt super quick? Because I just want to highlight what you mentioned about reaching out to them beforehand and making sure you have some kind of, if you can, a discussion with them about what they're looking for. I think this is something that is so very important that a surprising number of photographers actually don't do, because every publication or marketing agency will have their own style, for example, or they'll have a certain way that they want you to submit images.
Yes.
And I worked at a motorcycle magazine years ago. And so I know what it's like to be on that receiving end of getting unsolicited emails from photographers who wanted their work in the magazine but had no idea about our style or how they should submit. And it can be a very high volume thing. And it's true, like you mentioned, as a publication, a magazine, we needed images, but we also needed people to submit high quality images that was on point with what we were looking for. And with our magazine, we focused on motorcycles, custom choppers, referred to lovingly as iron horses. And so the whole time I worked at that magazine for years, I would consistently get submissions from a particular, it was a couple different people who would submit images of their horses, like in the barn, animal horses. It was clear they had no idea we focused on iron horses, as in choppers and motorcycles. I mean, talk about a clear example of someone not doing their homework.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah.
In that instance, I would have appreciated a phone call from them so they could ask what we're looking for. So please, people, do your homework. Please.
Yeah. Do your homework and put yourself in front of people. I think it's difficult for us as artists to do that, to put ourselves forward for, you know, scrutiny and possible rejection, but there's really, really no other way to succeed. You have to make that personal connection with people, and there's a way to do it, right? And yeah, the more homework you do, and the more, I guess, subtle your approach, the more successful you can be in this endeavor.
Absolutely. And I totally interrupted you.
Oh, that's okay.
You were going to talk about another technique.
Okay. Well, I was also going to mention my website. So I do market myself. I do go after the clients that I want to do, but I want to work with. But I also have found my website to be really valuable in terms of having people find me and approach me with possible work. So
you totally predicted my next question about how Photo Shelter plays a role in the success of your business. So you mentioned that people are finding you, they're finding your website. Are they just you and then it pops
up? It's actually been really unexpected for me, because originally I had a WordPress site, and the WordPress site was great. It's, you know, very customizable, and I have a WordPress site for my blog. But as far as the actual photography website goes, I found that Photo Shelter has given me a much higher visibility than I had with WordPress, and I think it's because the SEO is awesome. And I'm not sure exactly what goes on that end, because I don't think I've had a lot to do with it. But when I first signed up with Photo Shelter, I was basically on page 6. And then within 4 months, I went to page 1. And then I guess a couple months from that, I was probably number 4 when you searched Vancouver food photographer. And I think I'm still like somewhere between number 2 and number 4. And as you know, that is very valuable because when people Google you or Google, you know, what they're looking for, they go to the first few people on the top of the page. And interestingly enough, I was actually told that they skip the ads, like the Google ads, and just go to the next person. So I found that kind of interesting because the Google ads are usually at the very top and they just kind of ignore those. And I ask these kinds of questions, right? I ask how people find me, right? Because I want to know what's working. So it's given me a lot higher visibility than I expected, which is great. Yeah.
Wow.
I've had people approach me for estimates, you know, from the UK, New York, you know, everywhere, like not just in my area. So.
My goodness. So it's kind of like every photographer's dream, but I think we assume it's the super complicated process.
Yeah,
too.
And it's not. But it's been very, very simple.
Did you have to input any keywords or anything?
I just input just very basic keywords that I, you know, based on what I thought people would look for, like Vancouver food, lifestyle photographer. That's, I think, pretty much it.
Wow. That is powerful. And you're so right. I'm one of those people where I do skip over the ads.
Yeah.
That pop up. Because, they, you know, they paid to be there.
Yeah.
And I don't know. There's just this trust issue that I have.
Yeah.
A lot of people have, but yeah, if you're appearing in the first, second, third, fourth spot, I mean, that's just outstanding. Do you have a blog or anything on your photo shelter site?
So basically I have a blog connected to photo shelter. So if you go to my website, darinakopchak.com, there's a tab there where it says blog, and then you can go to my actual WordPress blog from there. So it is linked.
Very nice. But it's your actual darinakopchak.com website that's showing up in the Google results.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like right up there, which is awesome. So, I mean, I think it also depends on your niche. Like in Vancouver, I think we just have way more professional, you know, portrait photographers necessarily than food photographers. So if I was a portrait photographer, it might be a little bit different. I don't know. But, for some reason, it's worked really well for me, and it worked in a very short amount of time, which was quite impressive.
But yeah, there's something powerful behind their engine for sure. Yeah. And if you're a dedicated photographer putting out good work and have a fantastic layout, which by the way, the layout of your website is just beautiful, it's clean, it's modern, people are going to see that and take you seriously. Now, if you had a crappy looking website, excuse my language, you know, even if you showed up as number one and then people go to your website and they're horrified by either your photography or the way you have the website laid out, because I've seen plenty of websites where you can't even find the right portfolio, like it's buried deep in there, that can discourage people. So, but with you, it's your professional appearance is beautiful. It is absolutely beautiful.
Thank you. Well, I had a logo design, so I think that was helpful to have something professional for a logo. And then I think the template that I got through Photo Shelter really works for me. And I think there is a few templates, so there's got to be something for everybody that would be a good fit. I initially had the East template when I signed up, and that's like a tile template where it just pulls from the different galleries. And I found that it didn't really lend my particular website a cohesive look because the food product photography didn't necessarily mesh well with the portraits of chefs, and some of my photography is very light and then some of it is quite dark and there was too much contrast. So I found that the slider template worked a lot better. And if you have a nice big screen, you have these like huge images of food and it looks very appealing.
Yeah. And so I'm curious, how long did it take for you to initially lay out your website?
Initially, it really only took me a few hours. The most of the time was actually uploading the images and organizing them the way that I wanted to. But the actual site setup was very easy. The only thing that I had some help with was actually connecting the blog. I wasn't too sure about how to do that. And I had a web designer that I had worked with on my WordPress site. So he did that for me. But as far as the basically like interface and layout and so forth, I did that pretty much in a day, just in a few hours.
That's super cool, because a lot of photographers, well, we wear many hats, and so web design is one more thing that we usually have to worry about, you know, aside from taking great photos and finding clients and marketing and follow-up. And so in talking to a lot of photographers who have not yet found a web solution that works for them, usually the first thing they say is, well, I'm not a web designer. I don't know what to do. And the nice thing with Photo Shelter, and I've seen their back end, you don't have to be a web designer. They make it so easy and simple to have a beautiful layout. And I know how it is to be behind WordPress. I still have some WordPress sites as well. And like, for example, with this podcast, it's a WordPress site. And you definitely have to put in a little more, well, kind of a lot more elbow grease with WordPress, for sure. But with something like Photo Shelter, it's super, super easy to get a professional, clean-looking site very quickly.
Yeah, definitely. And it seems like great SEO as well. So, it's win-win.
Never hurts. Yeah. Never hurts. So is there a particular photography resource, tool, something that you would recommend to our listeners that would help them with their photo businesses?
Okay. Definitely. There are some good resources out there. I find that as a food photographer, it can actually be quite difficult to find resources that are geared towards a pro photographer, like a beginning to mid-level pro photographer. A lot of resources are marketed or geared towards bloggers who are working with natural light, and it's just a bit of a different learning curve. So I found the most valuable resource to be the Food Photography Club by Christina Peters. She's a photographer that is based in LA. She's been shooting food for about 25 years. And I guess it's been about a year, or within the last year, she launched an online learning site based on food photography. And it's really good for a beginner. It's good for you if you're a more seasoned pro. And she's really involved in the whole process in the forum, and if you have questions, she's right there to answer them, and there are a lot of great learning videos, and it's a really valuable resource, I find, that, you know, because when you're on the internet, there's just masses and masses of information that you have to sift through, and I've spent years you know, going through it all, trying to patch it together and try to figure out what applied to food, and this resource coming along has been really great, I think.
Christina is top-notch. I'll co-sign on that. I've actually interviewed her. And I'll make sure to include a link on the podcast, actually, in the show notes, because she knows her stuff. And she is such a sweetheart, too.
Yeah, she's been very helpful when I've reached out to her with questions. And, it's not even that much of an investment. And it's worth its weight in gold, I believe. Yeah.
Absolutely. How cool. Well, my final question for you, but one of the most important, tell us where we can find you online.
Okay, so my Photo Shelter site, as I mentioned, is my main website. It's where you can see my photography portfolio, and that's DarinaKopchak.com. And once you go there, there is a link to my blog, Gastrostoria. And Gastrostoria is where I write about my food photography tips. And if you sign up for the newsletter there, you can actually get a free cheat sheet on my photography process and the equipment that I always bring to shoots. And I also have a free mini ebook PDF there on restaurant photography. So everything you need to know about shooting for restaurants. And I also appear monthly on Digital Photography School and have been writing monthly for the Food Bloggers of Canada as well. For the Food Bloggers of Canada, it's just strictly business that I'm writing on. And Digital Photography School is more general photography. And I'm writing for Expert Photography on a regular basis, and that is just for food photography. So last week or so, I had a quite an extensive article on food photography composition, and they're going to be publishing the second part of that series, I think, in the next couple of days. So if you like reading and you want to read more about food photography business and food photography in general, those are some sites that you can go to.
And did you spell the last name on your last name on your website? Or if you didn't, could you do that?
Sure. So Darina, D-A-R-I-N-A, Kopchok is spelled K-O-P-C-O-K. So Darina Kopchok, one word, .com.
Perfect. I will include that in the show notes, definitely. People, if you want to see examples of food photography done right and done well, check out her website. You might drool a little bit on the keyboard. For this whole, most of this interview, I've had the image up of like brownies that you have on your website and chocolate cake. And
have you had breakfast?
It's crazy. No, actually I haven't. So maybe that's why. But it's just, it's exquisite. Your photography is a work of art.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for chatting and chilling with us. We really appreciate it.
Definitely. It's been my pleasure. Thank you for inviting me on.
If you're enjoying this podcast, I ask that you please leave a review on iTunes or Stitcher or wherever you're listening. The more reviews we get, the easier it is for people to find this podcast and search rankings. We want to reach as many people as possible and help improve our photo industry. I appreciate you all. Thanks for listening.